in your bulletins, pull out your outline. You're going to notice the outline's like really different than what you're used to. And this is going to be a very different presentation this morning, because I'm not preaching a sermon. I'm going to be interacting more with video. And hopefully, by the time it's over, we'll all have learned a lot and understand what we think God is doing. And, you know, where I spent the last 3 weeks while I wasn't here. Because I know some people thought I was on vacation. I will disabuse you of that notion before we're done here this morning. The picture there that you see, that is the Shwe Dagon Pagoda. It's the largest tourist attraction in Yangon. And the video that you saw after the break was shot by Rick Parker, not by me. And it was from the rooftop of the hotel we stay at, which is near the Shwe Dagon. And this is the centerpiece of Buddhism in Myanmar. And you can see they're doing work on it. Periodically they do that. And that whole spire there is coated in real gold. Hundreds of millions of dollars, or if not billions of dollars worth of gold. And so that's just kind of a picture to get you started on all this. Let's begin with the word of prayer. Father, help me this morning just to say what you once said. Help us, Father, to be able to understand what you're doing in other places around the world besides America. So just help us, Lord, to step out of ourselves and out of our culture for a moment and into another place where your children are serving Jesus for you there, just as we do here. I pray, Lord, that you'll speak to our hearts this morning and touch us in Jesus' name. Amen. Now, this is the verse which I've chosen, or verses which I've chosen to kind of start with. And I love this passage for a lot of reasons, but in particular, it always applies in my heart to these mission trips. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go to a place that he would receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. Now, when we left here, America, I knew I was going to Yangon, but I didn't know where I was going past that. And as you'll see in a moment, I ended up not going places I thought I was going, and all sorts of interesting things happened. And mission trips are always like that, at least in Southeast Asia. If you're not flexible, you are really going to have a bad time. If you think that the thing they give you when we leave here is exactly what you're going to follow for the next 2-3 weeks, you're sadly disappointed. By faith, he went to live in the land of promise as in a foreign land. That's where I was, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise, for he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. And that heavenly city is exactly what this trip and what everything we do here is all about. Because whether you work for Christ here or you work for him overseas or anywhere else, you're always working for Jesus to introduce people to his kingdom. So that is Myanmar. And you'll notice that it's nestled there, borders on China and Thailand and Laos and India and Bangladesh. A lot of people wondered where Myanmar is. That's the country of Myanmar. And Myanmar was colonized by the British in about 1886, and the colonization ended after World War II in 1948, when it became a democratic republic. Now, you can see from the sign there, it doesn't last long. The Democratic Republic of Myanmar only lasted until 1962. And in 1962, the current government took over. They overthrew the democratically elected leaders. They killed them, and they installed themselves as leaders. Now, there have been many different leaders through the years, but the junta has stayed in control of Myanmar ever since 1962. And it was in 1989 they changed the name from Burma to Myanmar. Myanmar is part of the old name for the country that that they used before the British colonized them. But when, of course, when Britain colonized them, they gave them the name Burma, because one of the tribes there is Burmese, and it's one of the dominant tribes. And so that's the name that still today, if you go to the BBC website or a lot of other places, you will find that they will not call the country Myanmar. They call it Burma. But when you're there, most people there call it Myanmar. So that's why I call it that. People get all upset. It's me, Burma, it's not me. Well, you know, go visit and then tell me what to call the country. All right. Myanmar, as you can see on your outline, you have this map, is divided up into states and divisions. I do not know the difference between the two. There doesn't seem to be any rational way I can explain that. You've got the Irrawaddy division, the Yangon division. You've got the Shan state, the Kachin state, the Chin state. You've got all these different things. But that's how they divide the country up. That's their flag on the bottom there. Here are some of the people groups in Myanmar. You have the Kachin, the Kaya, the Kayin, the Chin, the Mon, the Rakhine, the Shan, and the Bamar, or the Burmese, or the Burmans. And then you have ethnic tribes. Now, I mentioned the first two there, the Lisu and the Ruang, are important. They live up in northern Myanmar. They are Christianized, and we'll explain to you in a moment how they came to know Christ. They are both Kachin peoples, two separate tribes. They have separate languages, but they're from the same people group. Are you confused yet? Hang around. You'll get confused. Then you have the Akan and the Padang and the Palong and the Salon and the Naga, and there's many more. There's actually over 100 different ethnic groups that live in Myanmar. Now, historically, they didn't interact all that often, many of them because of the, depending on where they lived in Myanmar, that's very mountainous, rugged terrain, but they're there. You've got Chinese, you've got Indian, you've got people from Malaysia, you've got, you know, Thais, you've got all kinds of people who live in Myanmar. So it's a vast tapestry of different tribes and customs and everything else. And as an example, I want to use the Chin state. The Chin state, you can see in the inset map, is over here. It's marked in red. It borders with India and Bangladesh. And you're in a few minutes going to meet a Chin lady who's a good friend of mine. The Chin state is currently undergoing a famine. And the government is currently restricting aid to the Chin state. People are leaving the Chin state to go into India and Bangladesh for food. The Indian government is now trying to push them back into the Chin state. So it's a real mess. Every 50 years, the bamboo that grows there naturally produces a fruit, and just like crazy, there's tons of it, and that causes the rat population to increase, and they come in and they eat not only the bamboo fruit, they eat the rice, they eat everything. And that's what's happening right now in the Chin state. Now in the Chin state, there are over 30 different Chin tribes that live in that little area there. 30 different tribes, okay? They're all Chin, but they're different tribes. Each tribe has its own language, and many of them cannot understand the other Chin language. So you have this problem of, we're all living here in this one state, and we're all Chin people, but we can't talk to each other. And each language has many different dialects, like, say, if you're from Alabama and you're talking to someone in Boston, you might have a hard time understanding them, right? So those are dialects of English. Well, they have their own dialects as well. So you got 30 languages, who knows how many dialects, and it makes communication, and it makes preaching the gospel, and it makes getting anything done difficult. There's at least one Chin tongue that most of the tribes understand, and Burmese is the national language of Myanmar. So most people can speak Burmese, although some places like the Rakhine state where I was, they actually pronounce it a little differently. So it's very confusing. That's what I want you to understand about Myanmar. If you just take the word confusing and put it next to Myanmar in your brain, it will help you understand a whole lot of what you're about to see today, because nothing comes easy in Myanmar, because the government is so bad. It's dictatorial government. It's following what they call a form of Burmese socialism. It's pro-Buddhist. It's anti-Christian, it's all kinds of things, it's crazy, and everything's difficult to do there. Here's some of the rules if you're going to visit Myanmar. These are the rules the junta has that you better follow. Never criticize the government. Never criticize the government. I've heard nationals criticize it, I do not. If you do, and someone from the government overhears you criticizing the government, you will be on the first flight to Bangkok very quickly. Never promote democracy. They are watching you to see if you do that. They're very paranoid about that. Never criticize Buddhism. Now, here's the interesting thing. 2 years ago, many of you saw on the news, the Buddhist monks, many of them, led a protest against the government, a pro-democracy protest. Many of them were arrested. Many were killed. They were beaten up. They raided the pagodas, and they took money and food and everything out of there. So the government can kill the monks if they get in their way, but you cannot criticize Buddhism or Buddha. If you do, again, first plane to Bangkok. They'll throw you right out of the country. So if that sounds a little contradictory, welcome to Myanmar. And finally, never ever evangelize. We do not evangelize when we're in country. We help equip the locals, the nationals, for them to evangelize. If we try it, and again, if they catch you, you're gone. You're out of the country. And they're very paranoid about that. They're just very, very suspicious of Westerners because of all these reasons. So when you're there, these are the rules you have to follow. Now, we have our own little set of rules on top of that, and the background picture there is this is where I worked when I was in Yangon. It's you're going to meet James Kong in a moment. It's his. It's on his property at the Tom Wei Christian Center. It's his church, and they're worshiping there in the morning. Never talk about anything important in the taxis. Most of the time, if you're going somewhere, you got to get a taxi. And you never know if the taxi driver is working for the government or is going to be interrogated by them after you get out of the taxi or not. So you never ever talk about anything important in the taxis. You don't talk about what you're doing. You don't talk about church. You don't talk about any of that. Oftentimes, they will talk to you and ask you questions. I've been asked, what do you think of our country? How do you like it? Da 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 da. And you always, you know, you have to be very careful with your answers because these people are either our informants or will probably be talked to. Obey the rules, which you saw a minute ago. You got to keep that in mind. People that come and disobey the rules, not see the problem is not what's going to happen to me. If I were to go out on the streets of Yangon and try and witness, which would be a real trip since I don't speak the language, but let's just say that I have a translator or something, what's going to happen? They're going to throw me out of the country. No big deal. But to get into the country, you have to be sponsored by someone. Now, James Kong sponsors us. So if I mess up, guess who pays for it? Not me. James would. So to protect the people that we work with and love there, we have to obey those rules. If you're asked by outsiders, you tell them you're a tourist and you're visiting friends. Sometimes you'll have people come up to you and engage you in conversation, and you never know if this is just a regular person, you know, who's just curious because they're very curious about Westerners and they love to know about America. I've had people come up and say, where are you from? And I'll say America, and they'll say, oh, I love America, it's so great, especially the younger people. But they also could be working for the government. They could be part of the immigration services. So you have to just be aware of that and be very careful what you say. And remember, you are being watched. When a Westerner goes to Myanmar, you're being tracked by between 6 and 8 different government agencies everywhere you go. You check into a hotel, you give the passport to them, they copy it. Back in the old days, you actually gave the passport up for at least 24 hours. That, my first trip there, that was spooky. It's like, I'm giving them my passport, so this is not good. Nowadays, they actually have copiers. They'll just, bam, they copy it, and that's it. But anywhere you go, they track you, they follow you, they're watching you. We've had secret police in some of our meetings. They don't mind if we teach the Bible to Christians, but if we were teaching them to evangelize or promoting democracy or criticizing the government, or if we were doing, say, classic apologetics, where we're saying, here's what Buddhists believe, and here's what we believe, and here's why our beliefs are better, you're out. You can't do that. It's not possible to do that there. So we have to be very careful, and you just have to just... Myanmar is like 1984 to me. It looks normal on the surface, but when you've been there for a while and you get to know people and you see what's under the surface, you realize, you know, nobody knows who they can trust. Nobody knows who's going to inform on them. So everybody's very careful about what they say when they're in public because you just never know. Okay. I'm going to show you a video, first of two. This is a short walk down a downtown Yangon street. Rick took the video, and that's James Kong. There we go. This is in downtown Yangon near Scott's Market. It's a big marketplace. It's not a poor section of town. This is actually a fairly well-off section. I was there about a week after this video was shot. I have no idea why it's doing this. It was fine the other day. Here we go. And you can see there are some nice cars parked here. These are probably the business owners' cars and trucks parked there. That's a long view. That's a traditional way the men dress. They don't wear pants. They wear a long thing. People call it a skirt or whatever, it's called a long. Oh, sorry, the video is so bad. You can see you often walk in the streets because the sidewalks are broken up and buckled up. And people set up little shops all along the sidewalks. They put down a mat. They put down stuff they're selling. Sometimes you can't walk on the sidewalk. But the sidewalks are also underneath them are the sewers, and they have a section where they're just drifting there, and you just lift them up, and there's water and sewage running underneath them. It smells nice. And sometimes it drips great. Here's a picture of some of the buildings. Just give you a clue of what it looks like. And so that's just a little picture of what it's like in downtown Yangon. That is a line bus. It's one of my favorite ways to get around. When we ride on line buses, they're usually not that crowded. Now, inside that line bus, there's two benches on either side, and it's jammed with people. There's probably people in the center aisle. And then all these dudes are hanging onto the back with one foot on the bumper. And they zip around town, like just they really go fast. I've been in line buses. James has a line bus now. So that is one of the ways you travel in Myanmar and in Thailand as well. So let me introduce you to some of the people. This is Bob and Peggy Keith. They're the missionary leaders that we travel with. And here's a little information about them. Bob is the founding pastor of Kingdom Christian Church. He founded this church a long time ago. We're working to have him back, come back here in sometime this fall and do some teaching on leadership because he now is a full-time teaching missionary traveling all over the world. But he is an author and an expert on leadership. He has a lot of great things to say. And some of you have been talking to me about mission trips. So I want him to come here too so that we can have a meeting. And anybody that wants to can just show up, ask any questions you got, and they can tell you about it because this is what they do full-time now. He pastored here in several other places. His last church was in Anaheim. He got his doctorate. He teaches at Hope International University, does some online teaching, and he travels full-time as well. Go all over the world teaching nationals to reach out into their culture. The old paradigm of the white missionary showing up, getting a building, having a little compound, going out and trying to preach the gospel doesn't work too well. But this is cool because what we do is we, the nationals tell us, here's what we need to know or understand or whatever. We go and try to equip them, and then their job is to take that and pass it on. And so that's what Bob and Peggy do. Now I want to introduce you to some of my friends in Myanmar. That is James and Marta Kong. They are respected national leaders in the Churches of Christ. In Myanmar, all the Christian churches, Churches of Christ, they're all called Churches of Christ. They don't use any other term for them. And James has been a leader in the church for a long time, especially in more recent years. There was a huge split in the Churches of Christ in Myanmar. It's still there. They're working on healing it, and James is one of the people that worked. It got so bad, he was physically attacked and thrown out of some property once. There was like a riot, and so the government actually, get this, the government, pro-Buddhist government, stepped in. They got some people from other Christians, Baptists and other places, formed a council with James and a couple other leaders to solve this problem. How sad is it when the world has to come in and help Christians get along? James heads up MVM, Myanmar Vision Ministries. And Myanmar Vision Ministries has evangelists and workers all over Myanmar doing great work, reaching people for Christ. And it's very exciting, and they're growing, even though the money, of course, is bad, very tight now with the recession, which is affecting Myanmar as well as us. But there you go. This is Mary. This is James and Marta's oldest daughter, Mary Kong. And she is now working with her dad, kind of his assistant. And I believe she's definitely going to be a future leader in the Myanmar church. Now, that picture on the bottom there, Marta's on the left, Mary's on the right, and you see that little head between them? That's Melody. That's their younger daughter, adopted daughter. Melody, if Mary's going to take over her dad's ministry someday, which I'm pretty sure she will, Melody may take over the country. She may take over the world. She's this little kid, but I have seen Melody, 8 years old, just bossing adults around and organizing things. And I mean, you know, she's like, she's a go-getter, let me tell you. She's an amazing girl. So, but I've known Mary since she was about Melody's age and have watched her grow up. And I want to show you something that she gave me. This is a picture that we had taken on our last morning. We were having breakfast at a nice place. And then she made that into a card. It says, "May God bless you in your ministry. Please continue to pray for me as I hope to become a disciple of Jesus." Now, that just killed me when I got that. A couple of years ago, Mary was with a team of people going out into the jungle, taking the gospel to different villages. She got not one, not two, not three, but five different forms of malaria. And she nearly died. This girl has already suffered more for Jesus and serving him than I have and probably ever will. And yet she says, "I hope to become a disciple of Jesus." She's an amazing young woman, and I just have so much love and respect for her. Now, Ginzi is the next person I want to introduce you to. The lady standing next to me in that picture, that is Ginzi. Ginzi is one of Marta's sisters. When I met Ginzi, it was interesting because I didn't know who she was. She just walked into the room and Marta introduced her to me. Usually in Myanmar, when you meet people, one of the first questions in your head is, how much English do they know? So, you know, can we talk and we communicate? When I met Ginzi, that did not even occur to me. What I was concerned about was whether I could still speak English. Because not only is she beautiful, but she's just got one of those people who just has a very powerful presence in the room. And as I got to know Ginzi, she's really just an amazing person. She runs two orphanages, one in Yangon, one in Patau, which is way up north. I'll show you where that is in a minute. And she started from scratch with nothing. She felt God was calling her to do this. The first time I visited her orphanage, it was in a little, you've seen those little like bamboo huts they live in. She had like 8 kids in this little hut on the outskirts of Yangon, and she started her ministry. She didn't wait for support from Westerners. She didn't go around and ask for support. In fact, I do support Ginzi every time I go over. I give her money, and sometimes she doesn't even want to take it from me. You know, 2 years ago, I gave her an envelope. She said, "What's that?" I said, "Ginzi, you know what this is. It's the same thing I give you every time you see me. You know, it's support money." And she was like, "Oh." So she is really full of the Holy Spirit, loves God, and right now is in a difficult situation because the government is starting to crack down on orphanages because Christians have started tons of them for two reasons. One is it's in the Christian ethic to reach out and help these young children. And Myanmar is full of kids. Their parents have deserted them or left them or they've died or whatever, and there's no one to take care of them. So the Christians are starting orphanages, and of course it's a great way to teach them about Jesus and raise them as Christians. The government's aware of this, and they're starting to crack down now. And they've actually shut down orphanages and thrown the people running them in jail. Ginzi's orphanage so far has passed inspection, although she was told, change the name. Don't call them an orphanage. Call it something else. Because the word orphanage is what's setting the government off right now. This is Naomi. Naomi is Chin. She's a young Chin lady who I got to know. Naomi is a former student of mine, and she has a master's degree in ministry. She went to India and got her master's degree. She is now developing a ministry working with Buddhist children. The government's already shut her down in one place where she was doing this, and she's restarting in another place. She also worked in her uncle's Bible college, and her goal is to start a preschool to help evangelize the young people in Myanmar. And that bottom left-hand picture, she's standing in front of one of my favorite spots. It's in northern Yangon. It's actually a memorial cemetery. The British own the land, I believe, and they hire people to keep it up. It's an immaculate cemetery that's there in honor of all of the people from the Commonwealth and the British Empire that suffered and died in World War II to liberate Burma from the Japanese. And it's an amazing sight. I've been there twice. I love it. It's amazing. But Naomi, like Ginzi, and just is doing this on her own. Naomi has been living on $50 a month. $50 a month. I took her a laptop. I bought her a printer while I was there. I took her a new camera, and I gave her quite a bit of support money to help her out. And actually, Naomi and I are kind of partnering together, and I'm going to work on ways to raise some support money for her, I hope, because, the people I love to support are not the people that stand there with their hand out and say, gimme, gimme, gimme. You see a lot of that in Myanmar, and we'll talk about that later. But people like Ginzi and Naomi who just step out in faith and do it, man, I respect and love them so much. They're working under extremely difficult circumstances. This last trip, we couldn't get out to see Ginzi's orphanage. In fact, there's a lady from Britain who's a major supporter of Ginzi. And she was not allowed to go out there because the government was doing inspections and they didn't want white people out there. And in Myanmar, it's really hard to sneak anywhere when you're a white person because, I mean, you really stick out, you know what I mean? So if someone had gone out there, one of the neighbors could have reported her and then they probably would have shut her down. So these are the kind of arbitrary rules that they just have to live with and they're used to. Now, let's learn some language because I know you want to learn some language today. So. I'm going to teach you how to say hello in three different languages. First of all, here's Burmese. It's Minglaba. I want you to say that with me. Say Minglaba. Oh, you're sounding like Americans. All right. Say it again. It's Minglaba. Minglaba. Very good. That's how you say hello in Burmese. And so anywhere you go in Myanmar, you can say that. That's like hello, good day. People will know what that means. But, of course, the tribes like their own languages, of course. So here's Rawang. James and Marta are Rawang. To say good morning or hello or good day in Rawang, you say Pamara. Pamara. There you go. Very good. And then there's Lisu. Lisu's another tribe we work with a lot. That's Wahwa. Yeah, now you have to be careful with Lisu. Lisu is an inflected language. There's about 25 different meanings for that. Wahwa means something totally different than wah wah. And whatever wah wah means, so, you know, when you say that, you're hoping they're going to cut you some slack, because I could be saying, you know, you're a donkey. I don't know what I'm saying. It's wah wah, but it's inflected. Inflected languages drive me nuts. But that, Lisu's inflected, and like I say, there's, in fact, the word Louis means something in Lisu. I don't know what it means. They won't tell me. Probably not good. Now, how do you say thank you? Here's how you say thank you in Burmese. That's the actual technical transliteration into English, but it doesn't sound like it looks. This is how you actually say it. It's actually Jesu Timbade. Jesu Timbade. Jesu Timbade. Now, what they do is they often elongate their words. So they'll go like, Jesu Timbade. They do a lot of stuff with their words. And they also shorten it. If they're in a hurry, I've heard them go, Jesu. That's it. But that's how you say thank you. So we say a lot of it over there, Jesu Timbade. So now you can speak Burmese. So you can go over there next year and just witness your heart out. Okay, how did Christianity come to Myanmar? Well, don't have time to do the whole story for you, but here's a couple of quick things. Way back in 1813, Adoniram Judson came from America, wanted to go to India. They wouldn't let him in India. He snuck into Burma and began preaching the gospel there. And then way up north, Christian church missionaries, the Morse family, brought the gospel to northern Myanmar after they were driven out of China. They converted most of the Ruang and the Lisu tribes. And they live way up north, way up there. And it is from them that the gospel is spreading all over Myanmar right now. James being Ruang, and there's a lot of them that are Christians that are all over the country sharing the gospel. Now, what was the original plan, whatever happened to it? The original plan was I was going to come down here to Yangon or Yangon, you can say it either way. And then we were supposed to go to Michino, which is up there, see the second star. And we're supposed to go to Patao, that star way up there on top. Patao is as far north as you can fly in Myanmar. It's 10,000 feet, a little over 10,000 feet. It's in the foothills of the Himalayas. It's a great jumping off point for hikers and people that want to, you know, hike in the Himalaya mountains. Whatever happened to it? Well, here's what happened. Oh, and then we were going to go to Sitwe, which is over there on the Bay of Bengal, quite near Bangladesh. Here's what happened. Michina dropped out. The Michina church is backed out. There's a lot of stuff going on with the government. They didn't feel comfortable with having Westerners there. They said maybe next year, not this year, so they backed out. Then Patao dropped out. Patao trip, it was on, then it was off, then it was maybe, then it was kind of, then we don't know, then it was sort of, then it was no. Because they kept changing the day of the flights. They do that a lot. And they didn't want me to get up there and then not be able to get back in time to catch my flight out of the country. That would have been bad. So so we dropped out of that. So all we did was, I spent my time in Yangon and in Sitwe. Now, what we do when we go to Myanmar is we teach at the SLS. That's the Summer Leadership Seminars. And these are some of the people I taught with. This is Dan, has a doctorate. He taught leadership. That's CV, who's a great guy. He's just signed on with New Mission Systems. I love this guy. I told him he's ever in Arizona, come see us, because he's really a good guy. That's Rick in the foreground, and that's Emily in the background. Emily's from Phoenix. She's a young woman. She's like 24, 25 years old, has an amazing ability to learn languages. She was picking up Burmese like I couldn't believe. It was amazing. And this is Bob's sister, Anita, who was with us. That's the Tredegon pagoda in the background there. And I don't know who that guy is. Some strange person that they just let on the trip. I don't know why. And there I am. I'm praying at the closing ceremonies of the leadership seminar in Yangon. Now, I put this picture in here. That's Rick there. Because, you know, people always give me a hard time because I don't eat new stuff. So I just wanted you to see me there with the chopsticks. I've got the chopsticks down pretty well now. I actually can even eat rice with chopsticks now. They don't use chopsticks there. Usually only when you eat Chinese food, they use a spoon and a fork. You use the fork to push the food on the spoon, eat with the spoon. But that night we were using chopsticks, and that is eel. It was really good. Here's another video. We'll see if this one works any better than the last one. Oops. Okay, it's supposed to start. Hello. Well, we may not have it. Let me see. Let's try it again. It should start automatically. That's how it was set up. Ah, here we go. You ever wondered how translation works? I'm going to give you a little bit of this. We'll probably quit early for the time. That's Emily. This is Mary.
And I'm going to share with you this world forever.
My name is Emily Ma, and forever is literally
no? I really came to love this song last summer, June 2008, when I spent a month in Thailand. I spent time with Atapasin Lee and his students there, and we came to worship with them every morning and every night.
We're just going to move on because of time constraints. That is one of my translators in Yangon. Burmese is difficult to translate because their syntax is different. So when we say a sentence or a phrase, they have to like take the word we end with and it starts in the front, and they have to totally flip the language around in order to translate it. It's complicated. Mary's a good translator. She's translated for me many times. So is he. This is a picture of the worship here at Tomway Christian Center. And I put this up. That girl over there, man, she can sing. She looks like a tough rock chick, but she can really sing well. And then, look at this. This is how they do their PowerPoint. It's on a sheet, just a regular old sheet. And you notice it's in Burmese and English for us. I'm sure when we're not there, it's not in English. And this is a closing ceremony, just a picture of all the musicians that sang that night. We all had a great time. While we were there, we had some people come up from the Delta. They did some relief work, quite a bit of it. We helped support them. And everyone wondered what happened. Well, one of the places they went was a village in the Delta after Nargis where no one had been. And the people said, why are you here? Why did you come? And they said, we are here because we love Jesus and he wants us to come and help you. And they began to work with that village. And that village, now gradually leaders in the village and other people are becoming Christians. While I was there, I didn't see this, but there were three people baptized, one of them one of the village leaders, into Christ from there. So if you're wondering if the support money is doing any good, it is. You can see their little baptistry they built. The water is green. Yeah, that is actually the color of it. Kind of creepy, but it doesn't seem to bother them. Now, Sitwe over here on the coast is actually spelled that way on top, S-I-T-T-W-E. But when you get to the airport, it's spelled S-I-T-W-A-Y, so I don't understand that. And it's not pronounced Sitwe. That's the way I've said it for several years. There's a TH sound in Burmese, which kind of sounds like a D or a D in English, so it's actually Sitwe. That's as close as I could get. Naomi said it was pretty good. This is the Church of Christ building in Sitwe. This is where we taught for 5 days, and we were there in the evening several times as well. It is not, I know some of you are thinking, oh, it's an old dilapidated trailer. Didn't Louis used to live in one of those in Parker? Actually, that building's about 3 years old, and they built it themselves. Notice, take shoes off when you go in. This is how we traveled around Sitwe. This was our mode of transportation when we weren't walking. We were crammed in the back of this and zipping around town in the old three-wheeler there. This is an example of how they sat. These people would sit like this on this floor, which was rough and uneven, for 6-7 hours a day, taking notes on what they were being taught. It's amazing. That's the floor. Notice in the circle, the hole in the floor from the termites, which ate all the way through it. You can tell by looking at the boards, they're uneven, the nail heads were sticking up. It was really uncomfortable, and we were barefoot. So you're teaching on this, and I'm moving around when I teach and doing stuff, and you got to watch where you're stepping, that you don't rip your feet off and all that. And as an added bonus, there were fleas. So this was the restaurant next to our hotel. The hotel's over there. Now, the first night we got into Sitwe, we were supposed to go to this one hotel where we stayed last year when we were there. And it was the only hotel the government let us stay at. That's what they told us. We got there. They told us the air conditioning wasn't working, which was impossible because they didn't have central air. Each room had its own little air conditioner, but they'd taken all the remotes out. And so we spent the night there, and they didn't really seem to want to stay. They had some government people coming in, so we left, went into town, stayed at this hotel. This hotel had no air conditioning either, so they put all three of us, Bob and Dan and myself, in one room, had one ceiling fan, and that was it for 5 days. So no air conditioning. The humidity in Sitwe is right on the coast, so the humidity was just absolutely mind-boggling. And it was hot during the day, too. Oh, it was bad. And then, of course, came that wonderful night when the mosquitoes attacked us. So we had flea bites, mosquitoes were attacking us. I counted this little area on this knee, about like this big, maybe an area maybe like this big around. I had 16 bites on it. Those of you who think that these trips are vacations, let me tell you something. My idea of a vacation is not staying in a room with no air conditioning, with fleas, mosquitoes, and two fat middle-aged guys. That's not my idea. Oh, and cold showers, of course. No hot water. No. I I stay in here. I live here. I stay in my room with one fat middle-aged guy, me, and that's plenty. So I don't need to see any more. But I did. Now, here's an example of the, they put this stuff on their face a lot, and it's very astringent. They do it. Sometimes they make designs out of it. It's just part of what they do. That's the jail, which is right near the church, very convenient. There's also a monastery near the church. One day a guy came over. I don't have the picture because Dan hasn't sent me his pictures yet, but a guy was walking around the street doing some work, and he had big iron shackles on his feet from the jail. This is interesting. You see this all over Myanmar, but especially in Sitwe. Sitwe in World War II was a major Allied air base, and that's the stuff they used to lay on the ground. They didn't have time to pave airstrips in World War II. They'd lay that out, and you could land on it and go around on it. You can see how they kind of fit together. This is an example of how they're used in town. You see them all over Myanmar today being used as fencing, all kinds of things. Now, Sitwe's on the coast. You can see they do fishing here. There's just one little fishing boat. I love this picture. This picture could have been taken 500 years ago, and it would be much the same. Here's a man fixing his nets, still doing it the traditional way, as his fathers and grandfathers did. This is how they deliver things. And see that big white block there? That's ice. That's how they deliver ice in Myanmar. So why do I go? Look at this picture. These are nuns, Buddhist nuns, walking past the church on their way to their monastery. This is a picture of this young lady you saw earlier singing. I just picked these pictures kind of at random. These are two young guys singing. I don't go on these trips because I like to travel. I enjoy traveling, but you know, I've been there 6 times. So there's like nothing there travel-wise for me. I go because of the people. Because these people work under such difficult situations. You know, the government's against them, the economy's falling apart, the whole country's falling apart, they have no money, they have incredibly limited resources, and yet they still reach out to their culture with the message of Christ. They still want to serve Jesus. And I just can't say no to them. It's so hard not to go and help these people, because if anybody's earned it and deserves help, these people have. And I'm sure you could go anywhere in the world. I've been in Africa on one trip to Africa, and you could say the same about them. But there's something about the Asian culture that I relate to pretty well. And so that's kind of where I've been going the last few years. I don't know what the Lord's going to do in the future, but I go because the need is, it's just huge. It's far greater than any of us could ever meet. But you know, at least I can do something. No matter how small it is, I can do something. Here's another picture. They're bringing water back from the monastery, because the neighborhood there gets their water at the monastery. They have a well, to the church to cook for us. So what did I learn? That there's always hope, no matter how things might look. I taught on hope there. That was my job. My job was to teach a series of classes on finding hope in difficult times, extracting hope from difficult situations. And you know, it really spoke to them because of the situation that they're in. But these people have hope, because their hope isn't in politics, and their hope isn't in anything other than Jesus Christ. And so they have hope. And when you watch how they live their lives, you realize it'll give you perspective, first of all, because you know, I mean, I think I have problems, and I do, but you know, compared to living on $50 a month, I'm really doing pretty good. And so are the rest of us. There's always hope. And you find hope often in the most hopeless situations. Second thing is, Satan's always working to divide the church. The church there is still struggling with this division, and division stops evangelism. You know, it's very hard to go out into the world and say, we have the answer, Jesus is the answer, when you can't even get along with somebody else who's running around saying Jesus is the answer. As the church, we have to unify and pull together. Because when we're unified, then we can focus on the gospel, and then we can really make an impact. And I came back really feeling the need for us as believers in America to get our act together so that we can be a better example to them. Because they still look to us for leadership, which is the next thing. Unexamined tradition is deadly. Now, that's nothing new for me. I've kicked against tradition my whole life. But the traditions they're dealing with were bequeathed to them by us. We sent missionaries there. God bless those missionaries. They did great and wonderful work, but they also left them with some things that are not so good, among which, number one, is this whole dependency on the West. We're trying to get them out of that, but it's very difficult. 2 years ago in Michina, when we were there, we met with the gospel committee. That's another thing the missionaries came up with. And the gospel committee sat us down and said, now, you know, we came to Christ through American missionaries. And so we look to America as our spiritual parents. You are our parents, and we are your children. And here are the needs of your children, and you need to help your children. And when we're there, we hear this a lot. And it just broke my heart because, you know, their father is God. It's not us. And one of the things that I closed both lessons with in both places was telling them they needed to put their trust in God, not in anything else, themselves or anyone else or America or the American church, because that's not where their hope lies. But it's very hard for many of them to see this. And so it does hurt the gospel over there, because the gospel is still looked at as a Western, American, British kind of a thing. And so that hinders the spread of the gospel. You know, I came home thinking I need to re-examine my own life and see what kind of unexamined traditions might be getting in the way of what I need to be doing for God. Now, they call me teacher over there. And, of course, in that culture, teachers are revered and respected. But you know what? The truth is, I learn as much from them, if not more, than they're learning from me. I'm absolutely sure of it. This shirt I'm wearing was given me by Genzi. It is a traditional shirt that preachers wear. It's kind of an Indian look. You got the Nehru, we would call it Nehru type collar on it. A lot of times they will wear a white long-sleeve jacket over it. Man, how they do that in that weather, I don't know. I was joking with some of them this trip. They don't sweat. These people don't sweat. We're all sweating through our clothes and everything else, and they're just, doo-doo. I'm like, oh, man. You know, but they call me teacher. But really, I don't go there. I go there to teach, but I go there to learn as well. And I have learned more from them about my heart and about how God works in our lives than I'm ever going to teach them. So when you go on one of these trips, if you go, you go to teach, you go to help, you go to build something, whatever it is you're going to do, that's all great. But you need to go expecting to have your life changed, because that's what God really wants to do through this. And as he changes my life and I help change their lives, then you have this beautiful example of the body of Christ working together. It's not the great white man coming to teach the little brown people or yellow people or black people or whatever. It's the body of Christ coming together to teach and build and lift up each other. That's what it's all about. That's why I go. And I know some of you are wondering whether about you maybe want to go, whether it's to Myanmar or some of the other missionaries that we work with. Probably a lot of them would love to have some short-term trips as well. You know, we'll see, and we'll see where God leads. But let me tell you, if you're going to go, you better be prepared to have your life turned upside down, because that's what's going to happen. All right, I'm just going to lead us in a closing prayer, and we're going to dismiss because it's just about 10 o'clock, so please stand with me. If you have any other questions, please feel free to ask. There's a little table on this side of the foyer. As you go out, you can look. There's some stuff on there from my trips if you want to check it out. And I just want to thank you all, before I pray, for letting me go and giving me up for 3 weeks to let me do that. It means a lot to me, and I think God is going to bless this church because we're so generous here, not just with money, but with time as well. And, you know, that's so important. So thank you very much. Let's bow our heads. Heavenly Father, I thank you for the privilege of having gone and served, and I thank you, Lord, for the privilege of being here and serving. God, give us servant hearts that we might go wherever it is you want us to do, whether it's around the corner or around the world, to serve Jesus Christ. Lord, let us reach out and serve the people of Kingman with the gospel. I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.